Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
This episode, we are going to be discussing the concept that we've heard out there that thoughts are things. This is a concept that is all often used in the metaphysical communities, and it's often used in the law of attraction and that kind of those other schools of thought. Donald, you're pretty familiar with the law of attraction. We've talked about it on this show before. So what is your take on what that means?
Well, for me, in its most simplest form, I look at it as nothing can become something without first being a thought. In other words, you know, the cereal bowl that you had for breakfast or that you were eating out of for breakfast, somebody had this thought at one point that said, hey, you know what? If we had a curved something or other, we could put stuff in it and it'd be a lot easier to eat. And I see that as the basis of all of thoughts or things is everything comes from thoughts. Therefore, they are things. And I'm not sure, because we haven't really talked about it before the episode, if you're talking about, you know, they are physical things at the moment we have the thought, or there's a time delay when they're actually come into the physical reality, or are both of those things together?
Well, I guess the question that comes out of this is, if it is just kind of this idea form that comes first, like you said, that it always occurs as a thought before it occurs as in substantial form, then why say thoughts are things rather than thoughts precede things or things are based on thought?
Well, I'm gonna have to go back to one of my all-time favorite movies from my childhood is basically The Neverending Story. Okay. And in that movie, the whole idea is that there's this world of Fantasia that has all of the dreams and characters and thoughts and imaginations of the whole world. Whenever you have a thought of somebody or something in your daydreams or imagination, they became real in this world of Fantasia. And I kind of look at it in another way, where the moment you have a thought of something, then on some level it is already a thing, even if it's just your consciousness, or it could be even a different level of reality or an alternate reality.
So the reason I want to pursue this, the whole idea of thoughts or things, is because if we're looking at it from the idea that it is another level of reality, as you'd said, or in an alternate reality, then why would these groups and these schools of thought say that thoughts are things? Rather than, I guess what I'm trying to drill down to here is if thoughts are things in another realm or another alternate reality, why do they not either disclose or elaborate on the idea of thoughts or things? They just kind of say, well, thoughts or things, go with it, have with it, do what you will with it, you know, put it on your breakfast cereal kind of thing.
Yeah. There's breakfast again.
I got the breakfast thing because you referred to it earlier. So.
Cool. Well, I think we might want to define exactly what they could mean or what we're saying when we say things, because we're saying thoughts are these things. So what is a thing? And I look at it like this, you know, most people say, well, anything I can touch is a thing. You know, if I type on my keyboard, the keyboard is a thing. My hands are things, you know.
You're saying physically tangible.
Yeah, and most people it's easy to understand, oh, these are things, because the word thing is a very general term that means something. Mm-hmm. And so I think if we take that into the realm of thought or consciousness, then a thing can be anything that affects you, because your thoughts affect you on all levels in one way or another. Because the moment you have a thought, the next thing that happens is you normally have an idea of, is it positive or is it negative? Is it good or bad? And then that makes a judgment, and then from whatever it is, that makes you a belief system that can grow into something else. That can basically determine a lot of your behavior, of how you interact with other people, how you interact with the world, and stuff like that. And in the law of attraction, I think that might be more of what they're really referring to, because if you have a thought, it will affect how you react and how you affect things in your environment and in the world and in the universe. And so if you want to attract certain things to you, then you need to pay more attention to your thoughts so that you attract more of what you want and less of what you don't want. Does that make sense?
It does. It sounds to me like what we're doing right now is we're just saying that thoughts are associated with things, or that thoughts have a connection to things. But we are not, right now with this explanation, we're not taking it literally. We're not saying that thoughts are tangible.
I think we're doing both.
It doesn't sound like it, because if we say a thing is something tangible, something that you can perceive with your one of your senses.
Ah, but see, that's why I specifically said a thing, maybe a definition that we could use for a thing is something that affects you. And in that respect, physical stuff would still affect you, and also mental and thoughts would also affect you.
Do you think one can affect you more or less than the other?
Well, that's not how the saying goes. It doesn't say, well, your mental thoughts affect you more than your physical thoughts. No, it just says thoughts are things. So do we really need to say that physical things affect us more than mental things?
We may have to drill that down to that.
Okay, if we're going to do that, then it makes sense, because a lot of the way that we relate to the world is by what we see, touch, hear, feel through the five senses and everything. And a lot of that is our input of the physical world. And it's very easy for us to say, oh, I have this stone in my hand, I'll show it to you. And you're like, yes, that is definitely a thing. Like, oh, so we both are in agreement that this thing in my hand is actually a thing. I guess it's easier to have agreement and understand that physical things are things because we've been around them our whole life. And then it takes a little bit more of a jump in general for people to go to that point where it's like, well, thoughts are things, and like, well, physical things I can touch, I can see, I can taste. If it's a thought, I don't know if I can actually hear or taste or touch or feel a thought. So how is that a thing?
And that's the question that we're asking. I mean, for example, if you had a big rock in your hand, a really big rock, you could drop it on my foot and I would yell and say, ow, that hurt. That thing has a definite physical effect. Now, if you have an imaginary rock, if you think of a rock and you think of dropping that rock on my foot, but you don't actually do it, the argument that would be with the non-metaphysical people would say, if thoughts are things, then why did I not feel the pain of the rock dropping on my foot just from your thought alone?
But could I put the thoughts in your brain and paint a story where in your brain you have the thought and you can imagine and see the rock, as I explain it, falling and hitting you on the foot? And would that be a form of reality that the rock did fall and hit you on the foot? If it did, then, you know, what's the difference between having a real rock hit you on the foot and a imaginary rock hit you on the foot? Because, you know, one affects the physical body more specifically, but one all in the brain, in the thoughts, they're almost the same. Almost.
Why do you say almost? What's the difference?
Well, it goes back to the test that they've done with athletes, where basically they've taken athletes and they've had them just visualize their whole routine. Oh, they used it with track people, people that ran track, and they basically had them, you know, sit down, visualize, and go through their whole track meet, you know, piece by piece, moment by moment. And then they had people go through and actually do their physical activity of physically going out and practicing and doing their track meet. And they found that, for the most part, that what's going on in the brain is very similar in both times. So the people that are imagining it are, in a sense, experiencing their whole routine, even if it's not a physical like the other part of the group. So we have to say either that if it's in your brain and you're imagining it, then is the physical and the mental reality similar? Are they both equal in the reality, or is one more real than the other?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, and that's the question here: is one more real than the other? I think one of the things I want to know is when, or that I want to explore. I don't know that we'll know it through this conversation. We know nothing. I think simultaneously.
Exactly, we know everything. We know no thing at every given moment.
There you go. So, is it almost trite to use the expression "thoughts are things"? Is the law of attraction community, not to pick on the law of attraction community, are the proponents of the idea that thoughts are things, are they just throwing this thing out there and hoping that someone will take it seriously and grab onto it and actually go with it? Well, if thoughts are things, I got to be careful the way I think. And of course, there's been several schools of thoughts, no pun intended, to having a certain disciplined way of thinking to achieve certain results in one's life. And now, is that just taking it and distilling it into uber simplistic terms that is almost to the point of ridiculous? Or is there really, truly merit? Do we need to actually take the idea that thoughts are things and take it as literally as possible?
For me, I would say, what's your goal? It depends on what your goal is.
Well, it may depend on what your goal is. However, I'm not looking at this as like a utilitarian tool thing. I'm looking at it as a concept. In some cases, you look at it literally. In other cases, you don't. You see what I'm saying? Then who cares what you think? If it's just an analogy, if it's just this little saying, well, thoughts are things, it's just like, you know, you think I could walk on water, or, you know, you have a come to Jesus moment with somebody. It doesn't mean that you're really, you know, getting Jesus in the room with you to play arbiter, or are you? It's you see what I'm saying? I want to actually take this one way or the other. I want to say, let's throw the whole thing out and say it's a cute little nursery rhyme saying to say thoughts are things, or literally thoughts are things. And I'd like to see if we can break it down in one direction or another, at least just what we believe.
Okay, so do you believe that thoughts are things?
Oh, sure.
If you believe that thoughts are things, what's your definition of things, and how are your thoughts things?
Okay, here's the best example I can use. And this is a broad example. I think there's fine-tuned examples, but the broad example is for me personally, when I dream, those dreams feel so substantial and so real at that time. Mm-hmm. And then I wake up, and the day-to-day that I go through feels so substantial and so real right now. There will be times when in my dream, I think of something in the waking world and I think, well, yeah, that's something I think is true and real, but it doesn't seem like it at this moment. So I'm going to go with what's real at this moment in this dream. And as far as my subconscious goes, it doesn't know the difference. If we use the whole analogy of you dropping the rock on my foot, something forms in that thought when you drop the rock on my foot. And I don't want to say it's just a silly little, well, you know, it. It's just, well, it affects you just kind of on a how you think and see the world. It's more than that. I really think that you thought about dropping the rock on my foot, and there was a whole lifetime that went through your subconscious mind of all the scenarios that played out in that. You see?
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to replay it in slower motion if you actually drop the rock on my foot. If you don't, you've experienced it. But in a more fast motion thing, and you've said, okay, I've just pegged that. As far as the subconscious goes, the experience is real across the board.
Okay, so I have a question for you. I'm going to bring back our good old friend Fred McMulderberry.
Yeah.
Basically, he was a thought that came up in one of our early, early, early episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And we've brought him back every so often. Is he anything more than just a conversational piece that we use for examples?
And that's all based on context. He's real every time we talk about him.
Mm-hmm.
He's absolutely real. And he may have a life that continues outside of our conversation, but it's kind of irrelevant outside of our conversation, but it's still real in one form.
So basically, whenever we talk about him and use him in our examples, that's like him having a dream. It's like, man, these two people keep talking about me, and they keep putting me in these different scenarios. I feel like I'm an actor in a weird kind of play or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe so.
So if he is a thing, and we have to say that, you know, if he is something that is a real thing, then what's the difference whether he is real just in conversation or real in physical life? You know, there might be somebody in Canada that's like, hey, I'm Fred McMulderberry. Why do you keep talking about me?
And have you ever done a Google search? I think I tried and got nowhere.
I went for the last name.
He's off the grid, probably.
Yeah. I Googled the last name McMulderberry, and I did not find anybody. Nothing came up.
Yeah, nothing came up for me, too. So,
of course, yeah. Since Fred is a more common name, there are tons of Freds that came up.
Right, yeah. So I guess that's a good question. However, I think...
Is that real? Is it a thing?
It's something. I think, therefore, it's something, you know. It's the Descartes, I think, therefore, I am idea.
Yeah, yeah.
But, okay, here's the way I want to look at it. It can very easily go in either direction, whether it's just a cute little nursery rhyme saying, or it is an absolute reality, that there is an inviolate truth to it. Hmm. I like to think of the latter. And the reason I do is because it helps for me to be able to look beyond merely the physical. The physical, we're here to have this experience in the physical realm. We're here to experience things. We're here to experience this amazing creative ability. And we discover who we are through the physical, our own creative beingness, our own divinity, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, the thing about it is, to really appreciate our own divinity, we have to be able to be in the physical, but also see beyond the physical as well.
Okay.
See, it's like when people say, well, we are spiritual beings having a physical experience. I think you and I agree on this, it's a flip-flop thing. We are physical beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a physical experience. We're physical having physical and spiritual having spiritual, as far as mm-hmm. I'm concerned. But in order to really truly appreciate this physical realm, I think it's important to really understand the wellspring of our own creativity, and that is our thought. That... yes, you could drop a rock on my foot, like you said at the top of the episode, that is, everything is born from a thought. Everything is born from a thought. And if you have a picture of dropping a rock on my foot, whether you do or whether you don't, is material once you do so. However, it's material to me once you do so. But it's also material to me when you even consider it. Because I've taken shape in a realm of being the victim of having my foot have a rock dropped on it. And that little thought carries an effect in so many aspects of your life. And the thing about it is, to me, the physical realm is just like a moving picture. It's like if you look at the frame of a cell on a movie reel,
mm-hmm.
or if a frozen image on a VCR or a DVD, that's kind of like a thought. If you take a reel and you spin them all together and make them look like they're connected moment by moment, every single moment of our day is like that moving reel. So what happens is, if we keep having one thought and we keep repeating that same thought, it's not that it becomes more real. It's just that it becomes more physical. It is real in the snapshot. It's like saying that, well, if you look at the still of that movie frame, it's not real. But if you watch the whole movie, it's real. It's just in context or out of context.
Hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
So the whole idea of thoughts being things is totally reliant on context.
I think it's more reliant on repetition, on the frequency of experience.
And, well, experience would be different contexts. And if thoughts are things and you still have the same thought in different experiences, in different areas of context, then that would become an overwhelming thought in your experience to have that. Which, in the law of attraction area, you would be sending out that quote-unquote signal to the universe to attract that thought to you, because that's where your attention is. And one of the other things that they say is where energy flows, where attention goes.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts are energy, and if your thoughts are constantly going to a certain area in a certain context over and over again, then you are going to attract more and more of that kind of what those thoughts are into your life.
Right.
So, right. You know, it's kind of like what you said, you know, thoughts are things, but, you know, why don't they say thoughts precede things? I look at it this way, you know, there's the idea of the third dimension is kind of a slower vibration than some of the higher dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Like thought in itself, if we're in a dimension of pure thought, every moment we had a thought would be instant reality.
Exactly.
But third dimensional reality it moves slower, so we can have thousands of thoughts in a day and very few of them may manifest into the physical reality.
Yeah, as far as we can tell. I mean, how do we know that an experience that we have did not manifest from thought? How do we know that? I mean, for so many people, thoughts are so fleeting, thoughts are so fast, and thoughts are so rapid fire that how do we know that some experience that we didn't have did not occur from a compilation and an aggregation of thoughts that have occurred throughout time? And now let me to play with time a little bit. Some of these thoughts that whatever, let's say like event, let's call it event 2417.
2417. Oh, you're bringing that, four digits in. I normally stay why with not? Three, man.
Okay, we'll do 241 then.
No, 2417 works.
Okay. What I'm saying is event 2417, say that represents something that happened in your life. Well, event 2417 may have occurred from some thought that is related to that event, but it's a thought that maybe you thought that you had in your mind well before it happened and that you had well after it happened. And if we say that all time is occurring simultaneously, that there is only a present moment, that the past and the future is an illusion, then the event that you experienced is a solidification of all those thoughts that have occurred throughout that entire timeline, whether it was in the past or in the future.
Okay, so let's take an example. It's getting around summertime, and you know, summertime is a big time for Hollywood's biggest and brightest and most best movies. And I'm not going to say best.
That's a good idea, because things blow up in summertime movies a lot.
Yeah,
and those don't make my best list very often, personally.
Yeah, but they're. I mean, Hollywood likes to consider summer movie time as kind of like making up their whole budget for the year. It's kind of like retail stores between Thanksgiving and Christmas. It's like, this is where we make our sales for the year. So taking your idea is basically a movie comes out. Well, a movie and everything, let's just say the thought of a movie was in somebody else's head for a while, and then the advertisers have a thought of how to change the movie to make it exciting to a general populace, and then we get wind of that, and they put the thought of this movie in a certain way into our brain, and then all of a sudden we have the thought in our head. We might be talking to coworkers or friends or family, and they're like, oh man, I just totally want to see this movie because that looks really good. And then that's a different context of, okay, now I have somebody else that I know and I value their judgment, and we've enjoyed similar things in the past. So this movie sounds like it's a good movie to see. So this sets up what they call a buzz. It gets you excited. It gets you motivated. And then the movie comes out, you go see it. And then afterwards, it's like, yeah, that was a good movie. And a few weeks afterwards, it's like, yeah, I saw it. I enjoyed it. It was a good movie. And this is kind of like what you're saying, where there's a precursor to the event. There's the event, and then there's the afterthoughts.
Right.
Well, if watching the movie was the thing that came from the thoughts, what if you were just walking downtown and you passed the theater and like, oh, what's a movie? Well, see, you need to have the context of what a movie is. And then you've probably had a context of experiences of other movies that you've gone to see in the theater with friends, with family, at birthday parties, whatever. And that created this whole thing where it's just like, so when one of your friends or family or someone says, this movie looks good, it triggers all these other experiences that you've had in context with all the movies you've ever gone to see with friends, and that you was good that you've.
I think there's a component of that you really just touched on just now.
Oh, go ahead.
Which is that yes, there's all these components that got triggered, but seeing a movie is not per se an event.
Okay.
It's an event on paper. And that's the thing about all the stuff that's on paper seems to, that's to me not as real as all the little tiny bits that it's comprised of.
We're back to the whole real and not real thing.
Well, thoughts are things. Things is, if something's a thing, then maybe it's real. You see?
So
I think we're going back to that idea. Yeah. Or manifest or whatever you want to call it.
Okay, so are things real?
Well, I would say, yeah, they're real.
Because we keep coming back to this whole thing of, you know, well, it's either real or it's not real or it's sort of real or it's kind of real but not really real. But you understand what I'm talking about? Like, really? Yeah, really. Yeah. And I think that's kind of what I was talking about earlier in the episode is like, well, is physical reality more real than mental reality? If you have a daydream or a thought or a dream, is that just as real as a physical reality, or is that less real in some way?
Is it less real, or is it just as real? I think that it's all the same. It is all just as real. But the thing is we don't believe that thoughts have any merit until we've actually, say, acted upon them.
But wouldn't that create a thing, though?
I think it creates a thing whether you act upon it or not. It's just a matter of how substantial that thing becomes.
Okay, so when you say a movie is just an event, well, isn't an event a thing?
Well, let's say this: if we're going to do this, because I'm gonna step a little further from the whole thoughts or things
okay.
in just a moment. If a movie is an event, think of a movie in your head.
Okay.
Okay, what'd you think of the movie?
I thought it was pretty good.
Okay, what made it good?
It was entertaining.
What made it entertaining?
The story, the actors, the directing, the
special effects. Oh, okay, right there. Hold on. You said the story, the actor, the directing, the special effects. You named four things about that movie that were entertaining, mm-hmm. right? So when that actor appeared on that screen, there was an element of entertainment because of the caliber and the style and the character that the actor portrayed.
Correct.
Which that actor portrays in other movies that you may not like.
Mm-hmm.
The director gave that actor a specific direction that another actor may not have. So all of those little tiny things are components to make a giant story. Every single one of those things can be considered a thought in and of its own. The movie is also a mega thought in and of its own. Each thought is comprised of little tiny thoughts. You see what I'm saying? And each little tiny thought is comprised of another little tiny thought, but when I asked you about this thing about the movie, you used an emotion to describe it. You said it was good, which to me I translate as you enjoyed it.
Oh, the thing is, though, good can be considered a non-emotional thing. It's an assessment.
I disagree. A good is not non-emotional.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Tell me something that, okay, you give me an example of good being non-emotional.
Can you not have an experience and not have an emotional energy behind it? Or are we always having an inner emotional experience at every moment and every second of our lives?
It's in some fashion or another, I would say, yes, we are to some degree. Well, I mean, I think there's variance of degrees. I would take that back. I think there are times that we don't necessarily have an emotion.
Well, see, and that's what I'm saying. It's possible to have an experience that has very little to no emotional content,
mm-hmm.
or that does not create an emotional content in us, and therefore...
No, you're still supposed to give me an example of this, though. You're trying to duck out of the example here. Now you're just blowing smoke, if that's the case.
Okay, you're driving, and the light turns yellow just as you're going through the intersection, and you make it through. Was that a good thing or not?
Depends. Were you trying to get to work on time? Would it have slowed you down if you thought
well, see,
you were going to be late?
That's taking the whole thought and expanding on it. And I'm saying, let's say just that thought of, oh, you know, you're driving, da 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 da, and then you're going through an intersection, you're coming up on an intersection just as the light turns yellow, and it's like, oh, I'm either going to slam on the brakes or I'm going to go through the intersection. You decide to go through the intersection, the light stays yellow all the way through just as you pass a cop. I'm like, whew, well, that was good.
Yeah, that was good. Why? Because you're glad that you didn't get pulled over by a cop.
Is it probable? Well, okay, let me say it this way. Is it possible to have that experience out of all the millions of people in the whole wide world? Is it possible that one of them could have that experience and not have an emotional reaction to it and have a purely mental thing of like, oh, no ticket today. Cool.
Yeah, cool. You know, isn't that a positive thing?
That's a positive thing, but is it an emotional thing?
Well, it's like, how is it non-emotional? If you say that's cool, that means you're subscribing some kind of value to it, which is based on an emotion.
Value? So everything...
So, I mean, okay, let's okay. rephrase that and try to make it as non-emotional as possible. There was a red light, or there was a yellow light, and I barely beat the yellow light, and I noticed that there was a cop there. Whatever.
Okay, to me, that shows your feelings toward people and authority figures.
Which are none, that I have no feelings towards people or authority figures.
No. You have an idea of how you want to relate to them, which may or may not have an emotional context of some sort of, you know, I don't care about them, like whatever, or they sicken me and they make me upset. If we should all just be able to live the way we live. And when you expand it to that level, then it does bring in an emotional context. And I see what you're saying. You know, that last little tweak right there was kind of like an emotional, you know, well, you wouldn't have said cool or used one of those really big descriptive words if you didn't have some emotional feeling to the outcome of that experience.
Right.
And I agree with you. That may be a low level emotion, but it, you know, at the same time, could somebody have that experience without an emotion? Kind of like, let's say, robot 2147. Is that the number we're using tonight?
I can't remember.
I think it's
2417.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, I think that's right. Not robots, dogs.
No barking.
So
okay, go ahead.
Okay, that right there, that whole experience right there where the dogs started barking, did that create an emotional response or purely mental response?
Well, what's the difference between a mental response is a response with no emotion where you're just evaluating it based on complete objectivity, is that right?
Yeah.
So it would be, I said no barking. The reason I said no barking is because I did not want the dog's bark to come through on this recording.
Yeah, but and that's because you had a goal of having a clean recording as opposed to listeners hearing us talk over dogs barking.
Right, exactly. I had something that I wanted in mind, because if we want something, what it is that we want things that fulfill a certain desire in us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know that they will please us, or we don't want something because they know they will displease us or make us uncomfortable. Those are emotionally fueled things. And where I'm going with this, because we can get really sucked up in the whole breakdown of that, is that every thought we have in our head, we say that the thought precedes the thing, but I say that the emotion precedes the thought. That okay. There is no thought in our head that does not have as its genesis an emotion. And because of that, then if we're talking about what's real and what's not real, which we started having a conversation about, then I would say that the emotions are the most real part of it all. And if the emotion is the most real part of it all, and all thoughts stem from an emotion, then the emotions are real. Whether the thought manifests itself or not is irrelevant.
And see, I see it going both ways. I see emotions creating thoughts and thoughts creating emotions.
Right. Okay.
Because
I see that.
Because, you know, if you have a thought...
It is a chicken and an egg thing then.
It is. It's a paradox in and of, well, it,
I personally think that the thoughts are as a result of living in the physical 3D.
Mm.
Because thoughts are these, when we have thoughts, we start dressing it up with descriptions and all that other stuff that goes with it. An emotion, in order to communicate what our emotion is, we always have to have something that piggybacks on it. Well, at least in the physical realm, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking to somebody and you're just mad, and somebody wants to know why you're mad, people aren't just like, oh, well, you're mad. Oh, okay. For some reason, there's always something that has to be done with these emotions. And I'm not saying that there's something that has to be done. It's just the way we deal with things in society. He's mad. Oh, why are you mad? There's always the why are you – for some reason, happy is good. Oh, well, I'm glad you're happy. I'm happy too. But if you're mad, why are you mad? If you're sad, well, what's the matter? I don't know what that's all about. But nonetheless –
You
the emotions
do know
what don't.
All about.
Well, maybe, but nonetheless, it's the emotions always seem to have a scaffolding built around them. That is the thought, if that makes sense.
Okay, how much
you
emotion...
know? Like,
I see.
Like,
I see where you're coming from, but I would not put as much weight on it as you're putting on it.
On the emotions?
On what you just described.
Why would you not put as much weight on it?
Okay, so. How emotionally attached were you to what you ate for breakfast this morning?
That depends on the context.
Did you enjoy what you ate this morning?
I did, yeah.
Would you enjoy it if you had it right now?
No, I don't think so. It's not a breakfast time of day for me. Right now, it's early evening.
So if you wake up in the middle of the night, like let's say at 1:30, 1:45 a.m., would you want to have whatever you had for breakfast this morning?
No, not at all.
Okay, so the thing is, have you had this breakfast that you had this morning? Is it something that you've had for a while now, or is it something you just started eating in the morning?
Oh, no, it's pretty consistent. Yeah, it varies day by day just a little bit, but it's pretty consistent.
Okay, so basically...
Oatmeals with fruit.
Okay, what kind of fruit?
Well, it happened to be blueberries this morning.
Okay, I'm just being really specific at the moment. So you basically are saying that you've programmed yourself to be in a place where this type of a meal is appropriate at a certain time of the day, but not at other times of the day.
It's only appropriate based on my desire for it.
I would say that that may have been the initial thing, but I think right now you've programmed yourself right now that you've gotten into such a routine that it's more of an expectation because of previous events, previous experiences with it. It's like, oh, you know, the first time you have it in the morning, like, okay, this was different. The second time you have it in the morning, it worked out yesterday, it worked out today. The 31st time you had it in the morning, is like, yeah, this works. And, you know, you see what I'm saying? Every single
Not
time...
Yet.
every single morning that you have that breakfast and you or say... Ah, this is pleasing. You're creating a stronger and stronger program that this is good to have in the morning so that whenever you have it any other time, it's not, this is not morning, so this is not as good.
It almost sounds like you're saying that the emotion is tamped down by a routine. It's not quite being jaded, but it's when you have the routine built around it that the emotion is kind of a given.
I'm saying if you think about people, their experiences, that is their programming, like computers. That's their operating system, and it's slightly different for everybody. There are some, of course, psychological things that are across the board because we all have pretty much the same type of brain, but we all have a set of experiences that have accumulated over our lifetime, just like each program in a computer has certain yeses and nos for everything that happens. Like, if this happens, go here. If this happens, go here. If this does not happen, go over here. And so on and so forth. And what I'm saying is, going back to the whole idea of, can we have a thought that does not have a strong or any emotional attachment to it whatsoever, is a thought really a thing? Because you're talking about how emotions and thoughts are intertwined. It's difficult to have one without the other. And I'm saying, when does it become a difference between routine, something that you've done over and over again and that you've found to be pleasing and or positive, And, you know, it's just like a computer that says, oh, this creates positive effects. I want positive effects. Therefore, I'll do this. Da, 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 da. And the difference between, oh, I'm emotionally tied to this breakfast. Today, it was blueberries. And tomorrow, I don't know. What could I have? I mean, is there that much emotional content to your breakfast? Or is it more of just like, oh, this breakfast works for me?
Well, it does work for me because it fulfills something specific. You see what I'm saying? Like, for example, the fruit changes. I would get tired of having the same fruit every single day, even though I have oatmeal most mornings.
Mm-hmm.
I like the change up of the fruit. I like the consistency of the oatmeal. Those are very different things. The changing up of the fruit, changing can be consistent. It consistently changes.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't. Maybe I have the same fruit 3 days in a row, but I like it to not be the same ad infinitum.
Yeah, we don't care about that. We just want to know if it has an emotional content.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This is the emotional content that I'm talking about, is that the emotional content to having the oatmeal every morning is because I've found over time that it works with the way my body processes food. And there were all sorts of emotional ties that went through finding that process. And, of course, it could change 5 years from now.
Oh, yeah.
But there was a lot that went to it. There's a lot that about, you know, when I get hungry later in the day and how long the oatmeal lasts and the fact that I'm eating something in the morning is not eating. There are all those little bits that had an emotional component that created this scenario. The scenario is born of past emotional content and future emotional content. That bowl of oatmeal I ate this morning was based on many, many thoughts that have occurred and will occur throughout time. And it manifested as today's bowl of oatmeal and last week's bowl of oatmeal and the oatmeal I don't have 10 years from now.
Yeah. And what I'm saying is, if we took all these experiences and all these thoughts that you have and we put it into a computer and we put that computer into an Android called it David Deere 2.0, you would do the exact same thing even though you don't have emotions. It's because you're programmed between those. And what I'm saying is, since it's programmed from your experiences, if you take out the emotional content, you're following a scenario that is like a computer program where you are programmed to do one thing or the other depending on the situation and what you consider your goal. If you're that requires no emotion. And so therefore what I'm saying is, you know, do you need emotion to have a thought?
I think absolutely you do. Because like, for example, if you want to use the oatmeal one, which, okay, we'll use it for a little while longer. I don't really think about eating the oatmeal itself unless it's a little bit different, because it's meeting an expectation that's already been set.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it's already fulfilling the emotion. There is an emotion behind it, but it's an expected emotion, and it's just I don't observe it. I'm pleased with eating the oatmeal, but it's not anything so cognizant. I'm so familiar with that emotion. That doesn't mean I'm not having it. It means that and that's what I think happens with a lot of people. A lot of people get in a groove of doing something because it gives them that same emotion over and over again, but it's a familiar emotion and you just don't even, in quotes, think about it. Well, I don't think about it because I do it every single day. Well, yeah, you'd notice it if you didn't do it every single day. You see what I'm saying? So yes, just because you don't do it every day, it's a comfort. Yes, it's a routine. Yes, but there's still an emotional component in there because, yeah, granted, you say it's on automatic, and I disagree, because if you took the bowl of oatmeal away and swapped it with something else,
oh, no,
and I wasn't expecting it, all of a sudden there would be a new emotion that took its place.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's automatic. I'm just saying that the operating system that you have put together right now that has brought you to who you are, like right this moment, right this second, mm-hmm. says that oatmeal for breakfast in the part of the day that is morning is a positive aspect, is a positive thing. It's something that's positive. And as a sideline of that is, we like things that are positive because they give us a sense of comfort and well-being. Well, that's exactly like a computer. You know, it's like when you go to turn on your computer, you hit the power button, you have this expectation that your computer is going to boot up and do what it does. And when it doesn't, the expectation fails, and then it creates a little bit of emotion. But at that one moment, are you emotionally attached to pushing the button? You're not emotionally attached to the pushing the button itself, which is a thing. And kind of like what you're saying with the movie as an event, you know, the action is literally just pushing the button. But the expectation is a secondary thought of this will start the computer. And that's where the emotions start slowly coming in, because if the computer doesn't boot up, then you're not able to use it. You have all this past experience of stuff that you want to do on the computer, and if you're unable to do so, then that causes frustration, and this is where emotions come in. But at the very moment, that very second when you're pushing the power button, I don't think you have emotional attachment to actually pushing the button, and pushing the button requires a thought before it can become a thing.
Well, I disagree again. I disagree because you would not push the button on the computer if you did not want that computer to be on. You would not want the computer to be on if you did not want to seek something out from whatever that computer experience is going to provide you. So the pushing the button is a component, an assemblage of a component in what you want. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I agree.
So the stuff that you're talking about that's automated is just muscle memory stuff. Like pushing a button on a computer, if you do it often enough, is muscle memory. I mean, we wouldn't be able to get through a day if we had to think about every single thing we did in a day. We couldn't. So a lot of things go into muscle memory, and a lot of things, but there's still a thought that initiates the firing of all those muscle memories. You see what I'm saying? I think when we get into the whole, whether we think about pushing the button on a computer, we're getting into a minutia. In fact, I think if you want to do the whole thoughts or things thing with the whole law of attraction, then what it's not about is not monitoring every single thought. It's learning to automate the kind of thoughts that you want so they're more effortless, so you don't have to put a lot of work into it. Now, here's the trick of that. The whole trick of that whole thoughts or things are you can't have a thought that is in contrast to what you want or what you believe if there's an underlying emotion that's preventing it. Like, for example, let's get a little bit more law of attraction-esque about this. Let's say you want a substantial income, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course they say, well, you know, you have to be able to believe that you have a substantial income, and you have to think positive thoughts about money and all this other stuff. And people are like, well, I think positive thoughts about money. I picture myself, you know, getting a check for $10,000, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what if you have an underlying root belief that money is the root of all evil, and so, or the love of money, whatever you want to say, and that scares you, that thinking that you could be corrupted by money. There's the emotional content behind that. The emotional content is going to completely short circuit any other positive thought that you could have that is supposed to help attract money to you, for example. And in my case, it's like, well, why do you even want to attract the money in the first place? Why are we focusing on the money? What do you want from the money? So if you go straight to the source and figure out what it is you really, really, truly want, and I don't want this to be a law of attraction thing, but to me, it's more about, we say that thoughts are things. I say emotions are things, because emotions are really the driving of points of manifestation. So the thought, if we recognize that the thoughts that we have are based on an emotion, and we learn what's going on with the emotional state and what's triggering the emotional state, then I personally believe, yes, thoughts and emotions can occur simultaneously, but I think that the emotion has a better chance of guiding the way the thought is going to be. If you want to say that the thought has a better chance of guiding the emotional, you have to figure out there's still emotions behind that. You see what I'm saying? It's hard to think a thought that is counter to whatever your current emotional state is, which may be based on beliefs. It is kind of a chicken and egg thing, but I do believe you cannot look at this whole formula without looking at the emotional component.
Oh, and I agree with you. I'm not saying, you know, emotions don't play a huge part in it. I'm just saying that, You know, if we're going with thoughts, the whole idea is thoughts are things, then we have to break it all down to, can you have a thought without an emotion? And if you are able to have a thought without an emotion, is it then a thing? Just, you know, basically that's it, is if you have a thought without any emotional content, is it a thing? And if we want to go a little bit more into what we were talking about earlier, you know, is it a real thing or just a imaginary thing?
Oh, I think it's an irrelevant thing.
Irrelevant? Isn't everything irrelevant?
It means nothing to me, basically. It means no thing to me. If there's no emotional connection to something, some tangible object in this world, then it doesn't mean anything to you. And what are you going to do with that? Nothing. There's no tangible aspect that it provides as far as an impact in your world. So, I mean, I think we do that. Sometimes we give too much relevance to things that don't really have any relevance. Like, for example, if you look at money, if you look at a piece, it's just the 1 3/8 by 4 inch piece of paper for an American dollar bill. But what does it mean? It only means whatever that dollar bill means to us. What does it represent as far as what it can buy us? And then whatever we're buying, what does that represent as far as the emotional need that it fulfills? So it always comes back to the emotion. So it's not that, to me, it's not thoughts or things. It's emotions or things. And thoughts or things is just a fact. It's a byproduct of emotions. That emotions, if we consider emotions and thoughts synonymous, then emotions are things. Here's the interesting thing. You asked me, can you have a thought without an emotion attached? Mm-hmm. Well, I started thinking of meditation. But meditation is basically clearing thoughts or recognizing thoughts as really, as detaching yourself from those thoughts. And the more they say that, the more you can take thoughts that come in your head and just recognize them as only a thought with no emotional perception to it, you get to a point of clearing your mind. And that, I think, I personally believe that when you do that, you make room to be able to sense and feel your emotions, which I think the intuition's highly attuned to, without the thoughts. You remember Herb Tarlick? Did you watch WKRP in Cincinnati?
I saw a couple episodes here and there, but I wasn't a regular time watcher.
Well, he wore these god-awful suits, mm-hmm. right? And there were just all these plaids and checkers and all this other stuff. Yeah, and they just... It's too much. It's overstimulation. You ever look at something and it's just has so much color and pattern and all that other stuff that it's overstimulating?
Yeah.
I think that sometimes when we get too many, in quotes, thoughts in our head, it really, I bet you all those thoughts are usually because of their conflicting emotions that are creating too much busy monkey mind stuff. And what happens is I think that we can't really be creative. We cannot tap into our true sense of creativity, of creative power. Because if we have all these scattered thoughts, we're going to create scattered stuff in our lives. You go into people's offices and they have papers all over the desk and stuff like that. I really think that you're seeing their thoughts laid out on desks and stuff like that. It manifests as this chaotic clutter of mess everywhere. And I think that when the whole idea of the meditation is to take the clear of the mind and to basically distill down and get that clutter out of the way so that you can truly connect to what it is the true root and raw kernel, nugget, pearl of whatever the emotional content is. And then when you get to that, you can create a more direct focus of manifestation in the, in quotes, reality.
And that's why earlier in the episode, when you had asked me about that, is, you know, our thoughts, things, you know, I basically said, well, it depends on your goal, because if you don't have a goal, further on the episode, I use the term expectation. If you don't have a goal or an expectation in mind, then whatever happens is happening and you don't really have an emotional attachment to it, which is kind of what some meditations, you know, that is their goal, is to detach from any expectation. Mm-hmm. And when you're able to detach from any expectation, then anything that happens, you can just take it as it comes and be like, oh, well, that was an experience. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I was talking about with the, you know, going through the intersection as the light turned yellow and you look over and you see a cop, but you made it through the light and he's like, whatever, I'll let him go. And you're just like, oh, well, I made it through a light. That's kind of what I was saying, is if you're able to have a thought without an emotional content, then to me, that gives much more credibility to the idea of the saying thoughts are things.
Because, see, yeah, and that's where that might be a little bit different, because I believe more so that thoughts are things no matter whether you have emotional content, like you're saying, or not, whether you look at it objectively or not. I think there's beauty in looking at things objectively, but that takes incredible discipline. And the only way we can really do that is to really understand where we are in alignment without constantly creating all this self-definition based on all this external stimuli, who we think we're supposed to be, who we want to be, who we don't want to be, all this other stuff. So I think that when we look at our lives and when we're looking at the manifestation, we look at the thoughts or things idea, if there's these things in our lives, and we have a lot of things in our lives that we don't want, whether it be circumstances or objects, that means that we are having conflicting thoughts. We're having chaotic thoughts. We're having too many thoughts about too many things, and they're creating this dissonance in our lives. So I think that it's a matter of separating chaff from wheat. To use your idea of being focused, there's that whole idea of A Course in Miracles. Are you familiar with that? I think we've talked about it before.
Oh, yeah.
Did you study it?
No.
Much?
No. That is one I have not studied, but I've heard most of the concepts in it.
Well, the exercises start off with taking things, objects, and looking at them as objectively as possible. And what it does is you recognize that thing for what it is and for what it isn't, and you remove all this value, presupposed value that we've placed on things. And actually, to borrow your point, the whole idea of that exercise is you're stripping away this automatic, like you're saying, you get in that automatic mode, that pre-programmed mode.
Oh, yeah.
You're stripping away the pre-programmed perceptions that you've constantly given, and values, which is emotionally attached, that you've given to these things, these objects, and you start learning how to look at things more objectively. And if you do that, you're starting to peel away the layers of all the fluff that's been kind of built on over time, and you can kind of start to extract the true value of it and recognize that the value of anything is only the value you give it, as long as you don't pile all the other stuff on. And so, yeah, I'm going to concede to you about the whole idea of getting in patterns, but I think those patterns are very creative too. I don't think they're patterns that are not emotionally driven. They're emotionally driven, but the emotions are so buried beneath the routine and beneath the other stuff that's going on that we just can't even look at it to effectively change the thoughts behind them to create different things in our realities.
It almost sounds like one of the things we could apply to that idea is stereotypes.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, we could apply the idea of, you know, stereotypes, where we have this compressed piece of knowledge from that we have culturally and socially. Well, you know, you throw out any stereotype that you want right there. You know, it's just like, well, white men can't jump. You know, that phrase right there. Oh, white men are not good at basketball because they can't jump high enough as high as other players to get the basket in the hoop. Well, that's an instant stereotype right there that contains a whole bunch of these little ideas that you're talking about earlier. I think it's very interesting when we say, you know, well, if I'm a white guy and I like to play basketball, socially I keep hearing this whole thing of I can't jump. And that causes a dissonance right there. Even if you are physically able to jump, your mental and emotional makeup will hold you back from jumping.
Right.
Or jumping at the level that you know that you physically can. And I think this is kind of what you're talking about with the dissonance, and what a lot of law of attraction people talk about when they say thoughts are things, is they can hold you back or they can move you forward depending on how much you weight and credibility you put into them, even if they're, you know, tied down into your subconscious. And this is kind of one of those things that I'm curious from on your opinion about, is if we have these contradictory thoughts. I'm going to use that whole stereotype of white men can't jump. Let's say Fred McMulberry is going out on the courts and he's going to play basketball, but he's a white guy and he can't jump, but he's been an athlete his whole life, and let's say he can jump 5 feet in the air easily, but mentally and emotionally, he physically cannot allow himself to jump more than 3 feet. Mm-hmm. If he's able to constantly break that pattern and prove to himself and others that I can jump, I'm a white guy and I can jump, will that overshadow and, you know, basically disintegrate the negative stereotypes that, you know, he's a white man that can't jump? Or does he have to consciously work on that whole idea of that social programming to overcome that limitation in his mind and body?
Well, I think it's more of an idea of why you keep having what it is you have. And I think it's about it's blatant self-honesty. If your situation is not, in quotes, what you want, then I think the best thing is we look at it and we say, well, why do we have this? What is this giving us that we really do want? You see what I'm saying? In other words, the things that we have in our life that we think we don't want, if we flip it around and just for a moment say, okay, if I ask myself why I have this, that what is having this thing doing for me that I actually want? What is this giving me that I really want? Sometimes we try too hard to control our thoughts so that we can get the things we want, and that to me is the short-sightedness of the law of attraction. But it ignores who we really are sometimes, because we start wanting things that are not in alignment with our own truths and with our, you know, with our own life purpose or whatever you want to call it. So I think that if we look at what we have and say, why do we have what we have, then we can start seeing the value from that experience. We can actually see what thoughts really are the highest generators that actually have the greatest effect, that are the most profound ones. So I think there's kind of a backwards looking, it's almost like reverse engineering of our own thought process.
Oh, yeah. And I think that a lot of people go into a combination of what they find interesting and exciting and what people say they're good at. You know,
right.
Kind of
exactly.
A balance of that. Oh, you're so smart. You're so good with technology. And you're like, well, I do like tinkering around a little bit. Well, you should be like an engineer or something.
Well, there's the should word, and don't get me started on that.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have like anything that you'd say that would actually kind of wrap up the whole concept of thoughts are things?
I think we've gone through the whole concept and the topic and the saying itself with a pretty fine tooth comb.
Yeah, that's true, right?
I mean, I think at this point we would just continue bringing up more and more examples to accentuate the points that we made earlier.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I actually don't have anything more to say about it other than are thoughts things? Yes. Why?
Yeah.
Because thoughts are things.
My summation is personally that I believe thoughts are things, and I believe that we can't dismiss it. Well, you know, it didn't really happen. I only thought it. I kept it in my brain. If we took a 30-day challenge and said, all right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to assume that every single thing I think has a literal effect on my reality, and we did that, and then we also looked at our reality and said, this reality is a result of a thought that I'm having, and just try to figure out what that thought is and the emotion behind it, I bet we would see significant changes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm betting anything.
Oh, yeah.
I believe that it's that valid of a principle.
Oh, and one of the things that, you know, we had brought up is that thoughts are things, sure, but that's like a penny earned is a penny saved. Well, there's more to it that in the bigger picture, that's just a starting point.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a matter of when we talk about what's real and what's not real, I think when we break down that line that we draw, this is real, this is not real, when we start fuzzing the line up, I think we get a better understanding of how true the idea that thoughts are things are.
Definitely, definitely. So David and I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for listening to this episode. If this is the first episode you've heard from us, we hope you've enjoyed it. And of course, if you're a longtime listener, we thank you for your patronage.
Yes, and you can find us at TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com. That's where we post all our episodes and the show notes to go with that. You can also leave comments there on our website. You can actually leave comments on our Facebook page too, which is TTRP Podcast. Or you could shoot us an email, which is either Donald's first name, which is Donald, or David, or feedback at TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com.
Cool. Very cool. So for Take the Red Pill, my name is Donald Dalton, wishing you to focus on the thoughts that are your things.
And I'm David Deere. Whatever you think, it is.